Malcolm X's journey begins in violence and ends in martyrdom, bookended by America's racial hatred. Born in 1925 with the Ku Klux Klan surrounding his pregnant mother's home, his childhood was defined by trauma. His father's suspicious death under streetcar tracks, his mother's institutionalization, and the disintegration of his family. As a light-skinned black boy in white-dominated Mason, Michigan, Malcolm excelled academically until a pivotal moment when his teacher crushed his lawyer ambitions, suggesting carpentry instead as realistic for a nigger. This crystallized his growing alienation from white society. What makes Malcolm's story so compelling is how thoroughly American it is, a tale of reinvention through sheer will. When his half-sister Ella invited him to Boston in 1940, Malcolm encountered a vibrant black community that awakened something dormant within him. The contrast between his rural upbringing and urban black life was electric. Here was a world where he could breathe, where being black wasn't a liability, but a community. Yet even in this freedom, he embraced self-degradation, straightening his hair with painful Congolese treatments, later recognizing this as his first step toward looking white. Boston and Harlem transformed Malcolm from a naive country boy into a sophisticated hustler. At the Roseland Ballroom, he gained access to legendary musicians like Duke Ellington and Count Basie while observing how black dancers surrendered to rhythm in contrast to white dancers' mechanical movements. The underground economy became Malcolm's university. He discovered Harlem functioned as a playground where wealthy white men, society leaders, politicians, tycoons, shed their dignified personas to indulge strange appetites among taboo black people. These experiences revealed the hypocrisy of white society condemning black low morals while their upper class engaged in worse behavior. At Small's Paradise, veteran hustlers taught Malcolm street wisdom no formal education could provide. He learned to distinguish fronts from genuine underworld figures and understand the complex ecosystem of numbers runners and bankers operating with police complicity. This education came with severe consequences, cocaine addiction, paranoia, and enemies that eventually forced him to flee Harlem. Malcolm's criminal years are significant not just for how deeply he fell, but how these experiences formed the foundation for his later understanding of America's racial dynamics. He witnessed firsthand how exploitation systems functioned, how money flowed out of black communities, and how white power structures maintained control even in supposedly black spaces. Malcolm's burglary arrest exposed America's true fixation, not theft, but racial mixing. The court's obsession with his relationships with white women revealed the sexual paranoia at the core of American racism. His 10-year sentence served as punishment for crossing America's most sacred racial boundary. Norfolk Prison Colony became Malcolm's unexpected salvation. Unlike other facilities, Norfolk offered educational programs and an excellent library. Here, Malcolm discovered knowledge's transformative power, voraciously reading books and studying dictionaries to expand his vocabulary. This self-education journey transformed the street hustler into an intellectual and future orator. The turning point came when his brother Reginald introduced him to Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam. The teaching that the white man is the devil resonated deeply as Malcolm reflected on those who had harmed him, those who institutionalized his mother, the teacher who crushed his dreams, the judge who sentenced him. This framework suddenly explained his entire life experience. This conversion reconstructed Malcolm's identity. The X replacing his slave name Little symbolized his rejection of white America's definitions. Through Islam, he found dignity, purpose, and context for black suffering. His transformation was both intellectual and physical, abandoning drugs, gambling, and pork, disciplining his body as thoroughly as his mind. Released from prison in 1952, Malcolm quickly rose through the Nation of Islam's ranks. His natural charisma, street credibility, and intellectual firepower made him an unparalleled recruiter. He wielded concrete examples. We didn't land on Plymouth Rock, my brothers and sisters. Plymouth Rock landed on us. Malcolm's genius lay in translating complex ideas into visceral language. He would cry out, "We're all black to the white man, but we're 1,001 different colors. Turn around, look at each other. What shade of black African polluted by devil white man are you?" This ability to connect racial theory to lived experience made him extraordinarily effective. By 1961, Malcolm had transformed from ex-convict to national figure. The nation flourished under his leadership, developing businesses, rehabilitating drug addicts, and building self-sufficient black communities. Muhammad Speaks newspaper circulated widely, and Muslim-owned enterprises demonstrated what black unity could achieve. Often overlooked was Malcolm's practical focus. While advocating separatism, he built institutions addressing immediate community needs: drug rehabilitation programs, economic initiatives, and educational efforts. His approach aimed at tangible improvements in black lives, not just rhetoric. Malcolm's faith shattered upon discovering Elijah Muhammad's affairs with secretaries who bore his children. This hypocrisy devastated Malcolm, who had lived by the nation's strict moral code. When confronted, Muhammad justified himself through biblical figures. "I'm David, Noah, who got drunk, Lot, who laid with his daughters." The final break came after Malcolm commented that Kennedy's assassination represented chickens coming home to roost. Muhammad used this as pretext to silence him while secretly ordering his death. Malcolm realized the organization he had dedicated his life to now wanted to end it. His 1964 pilgrimage to Mecca catalyzed his final evolution. Encountering Muslims of all races practicing genuine brotherhood forced him to reconsider his racial ideology. He wrote home, "I have eaten from the same plate, drunk from the same glass, slept on the same bed or rug, while praying to the same God with fellow Muslims whose eyes were bluest of blue, whose hair was blondest of blonde, and whose skin was whitest of white." This transformation showcases Malcolm's greatest strength, his willingness to grow publicly. Unlike leaders who cling to outdated positions, Malcolm evolved openly, admitting when his understanding had been incomplete. This intellectual honesty gave his message profound credibility. Malcolm's assassination on February 21, 1965, silenced one of America's most brilliant voices at its peak. His core message, that black people must define themselves rather than accept white definitions, remains revolutionary. The autobiography's power comes from its honest portrayal of human transformation. From Malcolm Little to Detroit Red to Malcolm X to El Haj Malik El Shabazz, each identity marked a profound evolution in consciousness. His life proves our past doesn't determine our future. Through education, spiritual practice, and moral courage, we can reinvent ourselves. Malcolm's greatest gift may be this template for personal liberation. By documenting his journey from prisoner to international statesman, from hatred to understanding, he demonstrated that freedom begins in the mind. True revolution requires changing not just systems, but ourselves, recognizing our indoctrination and reclaiming our humanity. In a world still struggling with racial injustice, Malcolm's voice speaks with renewed urgency. His unflinching analysis of white supremacy, emphasis on black self-determination, and eventual embrace of global human rights offer a roadmap for addressing America's unresolved racial trauma. His life shows that transformation, personal and societal, remains possible, even through the hottest fires of hatred and violence.